Good morning. As stated, I'm presenting for my colleague, Dr. Rohrbach, who was so successful in getting abstracts accepted. She's actually presenting in another session right now. I'm going to talk about chlamydia recruit screening programs in the military and whether they reduce pelvic inflammatory disease in U.S. service women. I want to point out that I've been very impressed with what my colleagues here have presented this morning, and they're doing, I think, the hard frontline work in public health. What I'm going to be presenting on is sort of a very much a step back, and so I'll go into some detail about that next. I have no financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation during the past 12 months or ever, actually. I'm also required to say that these are not the views of the U.S. government, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. military. Standard overview I'm going to go through. I think everybody in the room knows that PID is a female-specific inflammatory process caused by many bacteria, although we're focusing on chlamydia here today. It affects the uterus, fallopian tubes, other reproductive organs. Chlamydia is the major etiologic agent, although, again, there are several, including gonorrhea, that can cause PID. The path of infection, although it varies widely, takes about a year to present. Symptoms for many women range from mild to severe. About 85% of women with PID delay seeking care, in large part because in many cases it's asymptomatic, certainly in the early stages as well. There's many sequelae related to PID, not least of which is infertility. So the U.S. military has had screening programs in place for several years for some of the services. Unfortunately, DOD, there's not a blanket policy for recruit screening. The services do follow U.S. Preventive Services Task Force guidelines for just well women screening in terms of pap smears. We do annual screening of all female service members if they're under the age of 26. However, the services differ in terms of their recruit chlamydia screening programs. The Army has never had a recruit chlamydia screening program. And after the end of this presentation, you're going to wonder, like myself, why that is. The Navy has had one in place since 1994, the Marines since 97, the Coast Guard since 2004, and the Air Force since 2005. So one of the things we do at Armed Forces Health Surveillance Center is we monitor the health of our military members. We identified a research gap here in that no one has done a study on the effect of recruit chlamydia screening policies on PID outcomes, which compared all services. There have been some studies done that have compared one service to another service, but there's never been one done DOD-wide. I want to point out there is a typo here. This is a Bloom study. This is Mike Bloom. He did look and compare recruit screening policies for chlamydia in the Army versus the Navy, but that study was published in 2008 and only used 2002 to 2005 data. So what we wanted to look at was to determine the incidence of PID diagnosed during the medical encounters of former recruit trainees during the initial 12 months when they were on active duty following completion of basic training. So I realize I don't see too many uniformed personnel out there. So to break this down, let me say that each of the services has a certain period of time where they have recruits in training. And what we did is we looked at individuals who had actually completed their recruit training period, and then we followed them for a year to see the incidence of PID in that year following completion of training. And we're going to look at the impact of the chlamydia screening policies in each of the recruit training programs. We wanted to describe the epidemiologic characteristics of individuals in the study that did develop PID and describe PID incidence by year, certainly with a great interest in terms of service, and stratify PID incidence by age and service. So this is a descriptive retrospective study. Our study population were all female service members. They actually had to be between the ages of 17 and 42 because those are the restricted, those are the ages in which you can actually become a recruit in the military. And they were entering enlisted basic training between January 2002 or through December 2011. We truncated it at 2011 because we wanted to have follow-up for an entire year through 2012. We looked at all services. We included the Coast Guard. A lot of people don't think of the Coast Guard as a military branch of service. They are uniformed military members, however. The data for the Coast Guard, however, is not was incomplete prior to 2007. So you'll notice as I go through these slides, when we present data on the Coast Guard, it's from 2007 forward. Component equals active. Essentially what that means is these are women who their job, every day they put on a uniform, they're in the military. They're not reservists. They're not guard members that are called up at certain times. They're in the military all day, every day. So as I said, the surveillance period is for the year following their completion of basic training. And our data source was the Defense Medical Surveillance System. We looked at ICD-9 diagnoses. And so this is a graph, a diagram, just to kind of give you a sense of what we utilized for the underlying data for this study, and really for many studies we do on surveillance of many, many conditions in military members. So this should represent sort of the lifetime of a service member when they enter the military. And you have that pre-induction phase. I would say that's one of the weaknesses, the greatest weaknesses when we do surveillance is we do not have a great deal of information on medical history of recruits that we can access. Certainly we have MEPS there stands for Military Entrance Processing System, and that's when someone comes into the military, they go through a MEPS station. And we do know, for example, if they have pre-existing conditions like asthma or things that may impact their accession into the military, but we don't know if they, for example, had PID prior to entering the military or how many times they may have had an STI. So as you follow this to the right, DMSS is actually a longitudinal database. It's a data warehouse, and we receive feeds from many, many sources throughout the DoD. So in addition to getting all ambulatory and inpatient medical encounters throughout the life of the service member, and that includes both treatment that they receive at a military treatment facility, or if they receive care what we call outsourced care, which in a civilian facility, we capture all that care. I think it's important to recognize that when active component military members are in service, they have virtually unlimited access to health care that is free to them. And that's very helpful when you try and do surveillance because we have almost 100% capture of their medical care while they're in service. In addition, we can link this to a lot of other things, and just to give you, this is not relevant to this study, but we do have sera for all service members. It's residual sera from HIV testing, and we also test them pre and post deployment if they're deployed to theater. We have immunization data, we have lab data, chemistry and microbiology data. So we have a very comprehensive data warehouse to track the health of our service members. So remembering that our outcome of interest here was PID, and we're interested in incidence, so we were looking for the first PID diagnosis within the 12 months following the completion of basic training. And we use ICD-9 codes because that's what we have available to us. And these are the ICD-9 codes we chose that were indicative of PID. If you're not a provider or a medical coder, this may not be super meaningful to you, but basically, these are both acute and chronic PID diagnoses and also some symptom and sign diagnoses or diagnoses for STIs. Again, incident cases we looked for either an inpatient or outpatient encounter that had a primary diagnosis of PID, a medical encounter which might have had that PID diagnosis and sort of a secondary medical encounter, but there were other diagnoses in the primary that you would expect to see with the PID diagnosis. or two medical encounters with a diagnosis of PID in any diagnostic position, which occurred within 60 days. So we sort of lean towards sensitivity. That's one problem when you do this sort of research, when you use administrative medical data. Is your case definition too sensitive or too specific? We try and err on the side of being very sensitive. So this gives you a sense of our population that we evaluated. So in the time period, the surveillance period, there were about 223,000 women that entered basic training. About 10%, a little over 10%, did not complete training, so they were not considered in this study. About 200,000 women did complete basic training, but 19% of those women did not actually complete 1 year of service after they completed basic training. So they also were not included in this study because they did not have a full year's worth of follow-up. So our N that we're looking at is a little over 161,000 women who completed basic training and remained in service at least a year. So this gives you some indication of the overall PID incidence rates for all DOD females during this time frame. What was interesting to me, it was mentioned I'm an editor for what is essentially the military's version of the MMWR. And we did a study just looking, not restricting to recruits, but just looking at women overall and incidence of PID over a similar time frame. And so we found the incidence rate was about the same, which is 11.2 per thousand person years. We're using person years as our denominator here. You can see that by demographic subgroup, the Army has the highest incidence rate. The youngest age group we evaluated, which is a 17 to 20-year-old, just barely edge out the 21 to 24-year-olds in terms of incidence rates. As has been demonstrated in the civilian literature quite a bit, black non-Hispanic women had higher incidence rates than their other racial ethnic counterparts, and you were more likely to have a PID diagnosis if your level of education was high school or lower. I'm going to talk about this next finding a little more later because it is counter to what we see in the literature, and that is that there were higher rates among married and women who were married or in other marital status. So for our data, what's important to understand about that is that means they're married or they're divorced, separated, or widowed. So it encompasses all those categories. And single, as far as the military is concerned, and this has a lot to do really about benefits is really what it boils down to. But single in this database represents being single and never married before. So that's single, never married. So, and it's not unexpected, but you see that the higher rates of PID were seen in women who were not screened in basic training for chlamydia or who had a chlamydia diagnosis after basic training. So this just gives you a quick visual snapshot of what this looks like, what the PID incidence rates looks like over this surveillance period. To orient you to this graph, on the x-axis is the year of accession. Again, for non-military members, that just means the year they entered the military. And then the rate of PID per 1,000 person years is on the y-axis. And, you know, it fluctuates a little bit. You've got something of a peak in 2008. But the most interesting finding here is this very significant decline for women that assessed in 2011. Again, just looking at incidence rates of PID over the 12 months, you can see that Army, for the vast majority of the surveillance period, had the highest incidence rates of PID, followed by Marines and then Navy, and Coast Guard is pretty much always on the bottom. This demonstrates what I was talking about. The rates are from 2007 forward for the Coast Guard. And again, this is just another way of slicing the data, but you can see regardless of age group, Army has the highest rates of PID in this 1 year period after basic training. So overall, the incidence rate was 11.2 per 1,000 person years, which, as I alluded earlier, is pretty much what you see in women, whether it's their first year after recruit training or not in the military. For the most part, we're seeing a stable trend in PID incidence, except for that one set of women who assessed in 2011. We are still kind of puzzled by that because we can't find any policy changes. It doesn't reflect, you know, a lot of times we'll look to see what incidence rates look like in the civilian population surrounding military bases. That's not changed dramatically. So we're a little puzzled by that. We're doing some further work in that area. But in general, PID rates were highest in 17 to 20-year-olds, black non-Hispanic women, women that were serving in the Army and that were not screened for chlamydia during basic training, that were married, divorced, separated, or widowed, or if they had a chlamydia infection diagnosed after basic training. So I think I started this by saying, you know, you're going to wonder why Army doesn't screen women for chlamydia when you do see that they sort of lead the pack in these diagnoses, you know, over the last 12 years, and I can tell you it goes back even further than that. I can say that we provide data to policymakers, and it's not an insubstantial amount of money to screen recruits. That may be playing into this decision. Even though Army is not screening their recruits at all, we do see that PID rates in the they're only about 25% higher in the Army than in the Marine Corps. So here are the Marine Corps women who are being screened, and that would sort of lead you to believe that even after screening and education, that there may be women that are still practicing some high-risk behaviors. Also, as I alluded, we don't have previous diagnoses of PID or STIs for women coming into the military. So it may be that differentially, women that enter the Army have these diagnoses prior to accessing into service. And then here to me is one of the more puzzling aspects of this, because it's sort of flipped what you see in the civilian literature, and that is that married and other service women are at higher risk of PID than single women. And this actually replicates what Mike Bloom found back in 2008. So I think this is a pretty robust finding. There's some work by Lee et al. Which indicated that married women were at lower risk for STIs, but if they're having intercourse a lot, they're at higher risk for PID. So that may be one thing that is driving this. Limitations. There's a great deal of variation in racial and ethnic composition by service. The Army, for example, has the highest proportion of African Americans in service, almost 30%. That may account for some of the differences we're seeing here. However, the Bloom study did adjust for that, so that doesn't entirely explain the differences. Also, there may be some misclassification bias here, because although each of these services initiated screening programs at different times, I can tell you in reality, many of them were screening prior to the initiation of a service-wide or service-specific policy. So some of these women may have been getting screened, and we may have classified them as not being screened. The strengths of this study, very large population, 200,000 women, a long surveillance period, and we're fortunate to have the DMSS, which is a longitudinal database, available for follow-up. So in conclusion, even though all services except for the Army have begun chlamydia screening, we are really not seeing a huge impact on PID incidence rates. And again, this may just reflect behaviors that continue to persist. And we are continuing to do further evaluation of the long-term impact of chlamydia screening programs on PID. Thank you very much for your attention.